Hello, everybody.
All right.
And welcome to American Hit Radio, the Friday edition.
Awesomeness.
And I'm not by myself today.
No, I'm accompanying you.
That's right. It's Heidi Morales Ryan with my handsome husband. Who are you?
Tom Ryan, ready for the Friday edition of American Hit Radio.
Caught you by surprise.
You're not kidding. WHPC, Nassau Community College, 90.3 FM. We're here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 doing what we do. And we are going to continue our Motown Marathon to kick off this awesome three-day weekend that we're about to start celebrating
here. Well, I hope we have some
here.
Good Memorial Day weekend music on this show then.
I hope so too. I mean, we're going to...
Good luck.
Basically, right, exactly. We're covering Motown from 40 years ago. We're looking at the summer and into the fall of 1969 is the era that we are going to cover. And it's not a really big era for hits yet with Motown at this point. But there's a lot of stuff that's going on, obviously.
There might be some good sleepers.
Right. We're hoping for that and a couple of interesting transitional points as well. Let's kick it off with a band called The Fantastic Four. Now, I really like this band. Just that for some reason they just couldn't, somehow rise out, reach out and rise to the same level as the Four Tops and the Temptations. To me, they had the talent to do it. And interestingly, both of those bands recorded versions of this song, but perhaps this version by the Fantastic Four was the best of the lot. Not that it mattered, because it wasn't a hit for them. Here is the Fantastic Four singing Just Another Lonely Night.
To come, oh so slow, knowing how I need its warming glow. Foolishly I make you cry, confident you'd never say goodbye. And darling, that's the reason why, that even in a crowd, laughing out loud, I'm lonely, for I love you only, and without you, every night is just another.
I like that group. They have a lot of passion, a lot of feel for their material.
Appreciate it.
And in 1969, I thought that should have been a hit.
That song wasn't the vehicle, I guess.
None of them were for that for those guys, unfortunately. They just never really hit the way that they could have, I feel, anyway.
Or should have,
right. Next up is an artist by the name of Joe Harnell. Now, you might not know the name. Just as Joe Harnell, but he's a pretty famous guy, actually. He was a piano player and a music director, he toured Europe and America with Glenn Miller's Air Force and Army Band.
Okay.
Did a lot of work with them. Luckily, was not aboard when the plane went missing, apparently.
I was going to say.
And he did eventually return to America, where he subsequently got work with a number of superstars, including he did work for Frank Sinatra. He did work for Marlene Dietrich and Judy Garland as well.
I didn't know Marlene Dietrich had a singing career, but I guess that's neither here nor there.
Did some recording.
Right now.
Well, at this time in 1969, he was actually working as a music director for the Mike Douglas Show, the TV afternoon talk show. So he was doing all that, which always
had that show.
People coming on, and you needed a band because there was a lot of singers that would come on, and that was his job. So, you know, he started working for Motown as well and released a few tracks with them, at least one album anyway. And this is the track that was pulled from that album as his first single. He's playing the theme from one of 1969's biggest films. Back then, here's Joe Harnell with his version of the theme from Midnight Cowboy. Reasonably true version of the theme from Midnight Cowboy. Not the hit version, though. Not the version used in the movie. More like a cover version, I guess you could say. Performed by Joe Harnell. As you know, if you've been listening to the show.
I don't guess that charted.
At all. You don't? Well, no, that did not chart.
Okay.
No. A lot of stuff in today's show did not.
Okay.
Just what it's worth. In fact, I'll try to mention chart positions when they do happen. Like,
okay, so I don't have to keep on interrupting you and asking you.
Well, you can, just to basically drive home the point that there's not much of it that did. But the Marvelettes are the next band up.
Uh-huh.
And this song did chart, but it's rather pathetic. It's charted at number 97 on the pop charts. And it's actually, this is the last time that they're ever going to see a pop chart.
Well, and
the
I know, and they've been fighting so hard to try and get back on the charts.
Really. In fact, if anything, to put things in perspective, you know, as far as where the Marvelettes stood in Berry Gordy's universe or in his list of priorities, this was their first single of the year for 1969, mm-hmm. and it was released in September. So we let all this time go by. It was just like, you know, he's deeming them
Who
as irrelevant. The song itself, it was a previous top 40 hit. for an artist named Justine Baby Washington back in 1963. That's back when the Marvelettes themselves were having their own hits. It's been a while, right?
Yes.
So like I said, this charted at number 97, but it was the last time that we're going to see the pop charts. It was also, what was making things even worse for the band is that the band's lead singer, Wanda Young Rogers, had developed a bit of a drug dependence problem. Perhaps that was because of some tragedy that had occurred in her life. Her sister had been shot and killed earlier in the year, and that definitely had a profound effect on her. She was unable to tour with the band. She didn't want to record. So that might have had something to do with why they weren't releasing anything. But not recording and not touring surely meant signaled pretty much the end of the Marvelettes around this point.
Right.
Here is their last chart entry. It's a song called That's How Heartaches Are Made. That's how heartaches are made. That's the Marvelettes, sort of a swan song for them on the
how
charts.
How ironic,
there.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly, with the title.
Exactly.
Well, now we're going to get even more obscure now than we have been up to this point with Motown, because they actually did something a bit unusual at this point. They decided to team up as the distributor for a label called Chisa Records, C-H-I-S-A, Chisa. It was a label that was started by Hugh Masekela.
Uh-huh.
The South African horn player.
Yeah, his son's on E Channel now.
Yeah, yeah. And, right. You see, some talk show thing that he does, right? But his dad, Hugh Masekela, had a hit in 68 with a song called Grazing in the Grass.
It's
a big hit.
Baby,
and
can you dig it?
So he started a label with Can You Dig It? With his partner named Stuart Levine. They started this label called Chisa, and they were looking for distribution, so Motown decided to pick them up. The idea was to pretty much have it be a jazz label with certain African influences. So this was their first release on the Motown imprint by an artist by the name of Stu Gardner. Here's his version of a song called Home on the Range. Everybody needs a home.
I want a home.
Good God Almighty there.
Definitely, yeah. No chart action there, but that's some really, you know, cool country funk. Motown.
It's got soul.
You would never
power.
Associate that sort of sound with Motown, you know? But it goes, that's why playing every Motown A-side, as we've been doing, can be very informative. You get to learn all these things that were happening at the label besides the hits. Very cool sleepers.
That's right.
There you have. There's one of them. Next up is another one, actually. It's by a guy named, Monk. Montgomery, a bass player. So it's actually a track that features the bass guitar, which is really weird. It's another Chisa release. Oh, this is the same sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And this guy, Monk Montgomery, his older brother, I'm sure you know who he is. He was jazz guitarist Wes Montgomery.
Oh, okay.
And he came to the label through the Crusaders, the jazz band The Crusaders, which was with Joe Sample on the keyboards and such. Now, he who happened to play in the house band, or they were the house band for Chisa Records. So at this point, the Crusaders, the Jazz Crusaders, are actually a Motown act through their affiliation with Chisa Records, since they're playing, providing the backing tracks for all of these songs. So here is Monk Montgomery doing his version, interestingly enough, of a Motown track, strangely. An old Stevie Wonder song that he recorded called A Place in the Sun.
Thank you.
Our bad. We just got to go to the right track now. Track 6 actually is what we want. Here's Monk Montgomery with A Place in the Sun. Sorry about that. An interesting concept. That's Monk Montgomery with a bass guitar as the lead instrument doing his version of A Place in the Sun by Stevie Wonder. Barely recognizable, and there's the melody.
Right.
The thing is, like, he's fairly, he's lauded as one of the first important electric bass players in jazz, because he's one of the first guys to do that. So there he is, Monk Montgomery. Since we're speaking of Stevie Wonder, let's bring him up. And you're right, Heidi, this is where we now talk a little bit about the charts. Can't talk about Stevie without...
Oh, he's going up, up, up.
Naturally, exactly. And he's hitting the charts with pretty much everything that he's releasing at this point. This is a bit odd, though, because this song is actually 2 years old. It was recorded back in early 1967, and it was slated to be the A-side of this single. Eventually, they pulled it, and they held it back. It wasn't actually released until January 13th of 1970. At that time, it charted at number 26 on the pop charts and number 11 on the R&B charts. But because it was assigned the single and held the number, at this time, we're going to play it now. Here's Stevie Wonder singing Never Had a Dream Come True. Well, it was in the can from 1967, and here it is in 69 when they're thinking of releasing it. And again, they decided to pull it back and hold on to it. As I said, it ended up getting pulled and not released for a few more months. It came out in January 13th, 1970, when it went to number 26 on the pop charts. The reason it was pulled is that they had another song in the can that they wanted to use to replace it. An even older song that dated all the way back to 1966.
It was actually also a Stevie Wonder song?
Another Stevie Wonder song, okay. Right, of course. So they pulled that track to make this song the A-side. This track dates from some December of 66. Eventually, when it came out, became enough of a hit that Stevie Wonder recorded versions in Spanish and Italian. So imagine translating this into those languages. Here's Stevie Wonder with Yester Me, Yester You, Yesterday. That's our first bona fide hit for today's show. Actually went into the top 10, number 7 on the pop charts and number 5 on the R&B charts for Stevie Wonder. As I said, released in Italian and Spanish. It's kind of funny to imagine how you could translate a title like that. It's rather amusing. The title in Spanish was Mi Ayer, Tu Ayer, El Ayer.
Yes, and interesting.
Yeah, my yesterday, your yesterday, the yesterday.
Yes.
And in Italian, it was solo te, solo me, solo noi. Which I don't even know what that means because I don't speak
right.
Italian.
Right, might be like only a night.
Yeah, something. I'll have to call up my son who speaks Italian. He can tell me what that's about. Say it doesn't mean anything. It
or
means
maybe
about
an Italian listener.
Maybe it means about as much as yester me, yester you.
Right.
Know? Well, we got one more Chisa artist to play. This is the last from today's show, but since they got the label, they had a bunch of stuff that they were trying to put out all at once. This time, the name of the artist is Arthur Adams, a versatile studio guitarist who also had pretty darn good vocal chops. Here he is singing It's Private Tonight.
Close the door and dim the lights. I don't want to see nobody but my baby tonight. And if anybody call me, tell them I'm not at home. I don't want to talk to nobody, just want to be alone. Tell them it's private tonight. It's private tonight. I'm going to talk sweet to my baby. Yes, I am, y'all. Now all of my friends wanna come over so they can have fun, get drunk and tell lies. But I'm not in the mood for a whole lot of jive. I just want my baby by my side. Tell him it's private tonight. It's private tonight. I'm gonna talk to my baby. Oh yes, I am.
Whole new thing for Motown here with the Chisa label. Arthur Adams singing
and
It's
was
Private
it very
Tonight.
Successful for them?
As I said, no chart action, at least not up to this point with what was happening there.
Given them some credibility in different realms.
I mean, yeah, I guess it could introduce them to different markets. And the songs are great. I'm liking every one of the recordings that came from that label. So UMass Akila knew who he had. You know, he definitely had some talented people on that label.
Yeah.
And with Motown distributing, I guess there was good reason to be excited about the possibility of some of the stuff becoming, you know, popular on a mass appeal level, which just unfortunately didn't really happen, at least not at this point yet. One other artist that I wanted to can cover today, right now, in fact, is another artist whose things just changed for this guy, like on a dime. Junior Walker and the All-Stars were really the only band, really, at Motown that was really providing some gut bucket soul.
They sound like Memphis soul.
Yeah, everything they were doing was like the grits and soul circuit. Just they sounded like a hot club band that you'd be able to see in some roadhouse.
Right.
You know, just kind of like everything they did.
Chitlin' circuit, that thing that was going on.
Exactly.
You could imagine them easily in that situation.
And that's what they were about. And I guess they felt like they really needed to reinvent him in a different way. And they had brought that song, What Does It Take to Win Your Love? And he didn't want anything to do with it. In fact, he wasn't even supposed to sing it, but by default, he ended up having to sing it, and then it became a huge hit for him. And now all of a sudden, it just like overnight, that was it. That song became a hit. And now, because of that, Junior Walker's career has totally changed. He's no longer the Chitlin Circuit guy blowing his horn and getting everybody to dance and playing some rowdy, funky music. Now he's the guy who sings sensitive love songs. And this is a perfect example. The group, the Guess Who, out of Canada, had a big hit recording These Eyes. And they've said, you know what, that's a good song for you to record. Why don't you do a version of it? And this time he wasn't going to argue because he saw what happened the first time. He said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And what happens? This is his second R&B hit in a row to reach the top three.
Wow.
On the R&B charts.
Big time.
Two more coming as well. He had four top three R&B hits in a row. Here's the second, Junior Walker and the All-Stars version of These Eyes. Junior Walker and the All-Stars doing their version of These Eyes. If you are listening to this program, and if you've been listening in the past, you know what we're doing. We are covering every Motown A-side ever released in chronological order. And I mean every single one of them. From the day that Berry Gordy walked in, opened up the doors and said, I'm going to make a record. We started with that 49 shows ago. played the very first. And today is our 49th show, and we are all the way up to 1969, playing the A side of every one of those little 7-inch platters that they released.
What if someone missed a show and they want to get caught up again?
They can go to our website. If you want to hear this show again, you know, hear it in its entirety, you can, of course. We're going to post this on the internet later tonight. It'll be up. You can go to our website to hear it. Or you can even hear the entire series. You got 3 days this weekend. What else are you going to do? You can play all 49 hours of our Motown coverage this weekend.
I hear it's great to barbecue, too.
Motown and Memorial Day goes together phenomenally well.
Hand in hand. So
check out our website, and you can, like I said, you can see all 49 programs for the Motown coverage, and plus all the other stuff we do as well, all of our other shows. It's at AmericanHitNetwork.com. How easy is that? Or AmericanHitRadio.com. Same thing, takes you to the same place. How easy is that? It's just two URLs, one website. Nice and simple. So you can go there and catch right there on the homepage. You'll see the most recent shows. If you want to go deep, and you want to have some fun just running through them all and reading the intros and everything else, you can go to our archive site as well, which is shutupandlisten.com. S-H-A-D-D-U-P.
Shut up.
A-N-D-L-I-S-T-E-N.com. Go there and you're going to see the entire Motown series as well, listed in chronological order. So, you know, from front to back, go 49, 48, et cetera, all the way back to almost a year ago when we began doing this with our very first Motown show. Entire series on the Beach Boys, entire series up to 20-some-odd shows on Bob Dylan, of course, that we did. We did shows on Marvin Gaye. We did shows on Phil Spector, Bessie Smith, just a whole bunch of stuff there. Ton of information and hopefully a lot of fun. So I think you'd enjoy it. So check it out if you can. Meanwhile, let's get back to where we are. We are catching up to a point in time which was 40 years ago, pretty much a little bit more than that, because we're like a late summer, early fall at this point, with what Motown was releasing. And I have another hit to play, actually. This time by Gladys Knight and the Pips. It's another top three R&B track. One of these tracks that got a lot more coverage in the R&B market than it did on the pop market. It went to number 17 on the pop charts by Gladys Knight and the Pips, who was working a lot around this time with Norman Whitfield, the same guy who was pretty much almost strong-arming the Temptations by controlling what they were doing. But they were loving it because they were having nothing but success with everything that he was doing. And Gladys would have to say the same thing, Gladys and the Pips, because the Whitfield and Barrett Strong songs that they were being provided were almost always hits with what they were getting, as was this one. The name of the song by Gladys and the Pips, it's called Friendship Train. We'll Gladys Knight and the Pips singing Friendship Train. Now, it's interesting to note that their signature song, another Train song, uh-huh. Midnight Train to Georgia,
yes.
actually came after they left the Motown label. So that is not a Motown track. And I mention that especially now because, you know, this song, Friendship Train, was nominated mm-hmm. for a Grammy in 1969 for Best R&B Vocal. But they lost because there actually was one by the Isley Brothers,
oh.
another ex-Motown act,
oh,
who is
no.
now recording for another label.
Slap in the face.
Yeah, and they won for the song It's Your Thing, which was not a Motown
oh, yeah.
song. So there you have it. Motown basically getting some abuse from their ex-artists there. Next up, the Spinners, another band that's eventually going to leave the label and have phenomenal success after they finally get away from the chokehold of Motown, because they're not having any luck at Motown either. Here they are trying to cash in on the like something which was, I guess, sort of a mini doo-wop trend that was happening with the Originals and the Dells and Sha Na Na performing at Woodstock, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the Spinners with In My Diary. It is pretty. That's the Spinners before their hit career began. And the Philadelphia International sound that they eventually developed when they went to that label. Now we've got time for one more. And at this point, you might be thinking that perhaps this is Motown thing is beginning to get carried on a little bit too far, because it seems as if maybe the label has lost some of its relevance from the prime years that we were covering earlier, when we covered 65, 66, even 67 and 68. Things did seem to be slacking in 1969. Well, right now, with this track and this band, I would say this is responsible for bringing Motown into the 70s with as much relevance and as much influence on culture as they had ever enjoyed.
Mm.
Absolutely, hands down. We were talking earlier about how young Stevie Wonder was when he was signed to Motown.
Yeah.
Age 11. Well, with this group, even younger.
Must be the
Let's
Jacksons.
See.
I'm good.
We're
That's
talking
my
about
guess.
The youngest signing just turned 10. A kid who was able to channel James Brown and Frankie Lyman and Berry Gordy's buddy Jackie Wilson all in like one pint-sized little packet. Unbelievable. Performed with his brothers. Jackie was 18 at the time. Tito was 15. Jermaine, 14 years old. Marlon was 12. Michael, of course, was 10. The way this went down is almost incredible. Gladys Knight, who he just played, had seen these guys performing at a nightclub somewhere, and she was so freaked out that she kept sending letters back to Motown telling them, you got to get these guys. And they totally ignored it. Nothing was done at all. It then turned out that Bobby Tyler and the Vancouvers, with Tommy Chong on guitar, were sharing a bill with them. And they were so unbelievably blown away and impressed that they literally, physically packed the band up into their van and drove them from Chicago to Detroit for a live audition.
You're coming with us.
So in that sense, yes, it is true. You could definitely say that Tommy Chong is responsible for discovering the Jackson 5.
Wow.
That is a fact. Now, they have them in Motown, but Berry Gordy isn't there. Berry Gordy's in L.A. So they have to film the audition. And if you're a fan of Jackson's at all, you've probably seen that video of a little pint-sized Michael Jackson doing some James Brown moves and everything else and performing
the
stuff.
Yeah,
doing
the
dancing and everything else. So that's the film that they made, that they sent to Los Angeles for Berry Gordy to see it. So Bobby Taylor sends it out to him, sees it, and he goes completely nuts. He's like, Bobby, sign these guys now. Do it. You know what to do. Get working with them immediately. So he does. He starts trying to rehearse all these like traditional songs, traditional R&B stuff with them. Berry Gordy comes back and he's like, what are you doing? We got to get them something new. Send them out to me and we'll take care of this. So now he has the Jackson 5 fly out to Los Angeles to meet up with him, where he puts together a 5-man songwriting team to come up with a hit. They work for weeks on end. Team's headed by Deke Richards. Berry Gordy's on the songwriting team. They call themselves The Corporation. They tweak this, they tweak that, they change the words. A song was originally called I Wanna Be Free. They messed with it a little bit, and somehow, after, like I said, a couple weeks of work, I Wanna Be Free was changed to this, I Want You Back.
Ooh.